three additional submissions, that is this afternoon. Ms. Bailey, you have a few, Mr. Byron, Mr. Norman.
Yes.
Do you wish to, we've read the two reports that have been prepared. Is there anything that you need to add or possibly answer?
No, I don't have anything to add and I don't have any legal submissions to make.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hill.
Yes, ma'am.
The table is yours.
Who are these folk?
That's the council.
Is it? So they're the culprits. Don't shoot the messenger. Thank you for the chance to come along and speak to my submission. I presume the commissioners have actually read?
Yes.
You have? And are not familiar with this type of gig. How does it run?
We've read your submission, and if you wish to...
Reread it?
Well, and explain to us...
But I can't introduce any new bump.
Yes.
You can at this meeting.
Yes.
I thought I'd speak to the specific.
It's not outside the bounds of what you asked for.
Right. Apologies from my wife, she's not here, she's way to bereavement anyway, so...
Or in other words, you would give us additional reasons supporting what you sought.
Yes.
That would be fine.
By way of example, how long it took to get here this morning? Or is that just a reference to the infrastructure failings? But it's specifically with the proposed district plan change that I wanted to hear when I speak plurally, it's on behalf of my wife and I, and I'll give reference to discussions that we've had as a collective for the Mooney Road neighbours we socialise with. But we haven't gone to the effort of going legal and getting an incorporated society or anything like versus the Middletons, whatever. It's just in my submission... I just wanted to reiterate that we're opposed to the council's wish with which to include Mooney Road in this new zone that would permit greater intensification of housing on a number of grounds. We see it failing based on the advice received from the various Auckland-based consultants that QLDC got. Is that we've been there for 5 years in Mooney Road. We've been a ratepayer in the Lakes District for 15, and we've visited here for over 30 years when I was working. But we moved to Mooney Road specifically for retirement. We sold Millbrook and got away from that close suburban environment. It's a retirement village now. To Mooney Road for the lifestyle option that it avails itself to. Mooney Road, I don't know if you folk have... Are you lakesiders? Do you know where it is?
We have done a site visit and we've driven...
You have been down it? No, that's good. It's better than the traffic consultant, because he still refers to it as a gravel road. But anyway, so you'll be familiar with the fact that it's a no-exit country lane that doesn't comply currently with Queenstown Lakes with parameters for a road. It's only 3.7 metre wide. It has a corner opposite our entranceway, which has been the scene of a couple of accidents in recent times, albeit that I see in your reports that they haven't been referred to, presumably the police, with which for you to record. One was a combined taxi, went straight ahead into the willow tree, and let alone the near fatality down at the junction of Mooney Road and Hunter Road about 3 or 4 years ago, with a kid nearly getting killed down there. So it's a very narrow lane that's accessed. It's quite a tortuous intersection off Hunter Road. And Hunter Road is, in recent times, has become the main access point for the tradesmen to service Millbrook West. So when the speed limit was changed to 70k from Lake Hayes all the way to Arrowtown, there was a noticeable change in traffic flow up Hunter Road as the tradies accessed Millbrook West, and that's still 80k, although Scotty Stevens is trying to get it down to 70, but at the moment most of the tradies fly through there at 100k anyway along Hunter Road. So we have serious concerns on a traffic basis with regards to Mooney Road being proposed to allow greater intensification, that because of its physical constraints, Mooney Road, the council's mooting under their layering of maps that you can get up to 150 dwellings there. 150 dwellings on Mooney Road would be at two cars a house, and whether you squeeze a granny flat in there, possibly more cars per dwelling, would be a considerable increase in traffic flow along Mooney Road. There's 23 houses down Mooney Road currently. Half of them are lock and leave. The other half people, well, we know most of the people down there. People walk down the country lane, people ride horses down the country lane, walk their dogs, ride horses. It just would not accommodate greater usage for vehicles. It would be a limitation and a change on use for the existing people. The greater intensification of dwellings in Mooney Road would seriously impact on our water quality. We are on a bore supply. We're all right for water. We're on the south side of Mooney Road. Our neighbours on the south side, we share a bore with Les and Judy Nelson, and there's plenty of water. It is only at a 3 metre depth, and we suspect it relies quite heavily on transfer water from the Arrow irrigation scheme through to the wetlands and the tarns that are next door to us in their big paddock. Others on the south side of Mooney Road, the Maloneys and the Nanskibbles and the Faisencloots, they all have plenty of water from their bores. Whereas, unfortunately, people on the north side, it's been picked up somewhere in one of these reports, that, and we know people like Woody Rouse and the Botherways, the Harwoods and the Hills, the Marnies, all of these people struggle to get water on that north side because they don't have the supply, groundwater supply, and some have even got the effort of getting it pumped up from the mill aquifer down on Nelligan's Road. So water is not easily available to the north side as on Mooney Road, but it's okay to us. But the problem with where we are is the slope of Mooney Road, a gradual slope down toward Hunt Road, will allow greater contamination of that water should there be greater intensification. We suspect we get our water tested every year. I've got the latest Hill Laboratory. This is the only thing where you said bring along six copies, but it shows that the pH level of our water supply, now this is as of June last year, was at 6.8. Now our Ministry of Health guidelines is 7 to 8.5 on the pH scale, and we're at 6.8. We would suspect that with greater installation of septic tanks, there's going to be a greater spill, and there would be greater contamination prospects for bore water users, which is everybody down there, of course, because whilst we pay the same rates, we don't have the same infrastructure as other people here in the basin who are customers of QLDC. So that's a facet that is failing in Mooney Road, infrastructurally, is good water, as well as, obviously, drainage and septic tanks, which are the responsibility of all the occupiers down there. What else have I got to... It appears in reading a lot of the QLDC reports that justifies their desire to provide a greater supply of land for development. It appears to be a greater weighting on the landscape aspect of this consultant report, where the Whaurinui Hills are seen as capable and rated as a high opportunity for intensification, which bewilders us and the neighbours down, well, people down Mooney Road and the Maloneys, the Nanskibbles, the Faisencloots, Harwoods, Hills, Rouse, Rodwells and Hills are all opposed to this plan change. It appears as though in providing for the tourist, and therefore allowing the corridors from Queenstown to Arrowtown, namely Mulligans and Speargrass, it becomes a definition for above the line of sight from those roads up onto the elevated nature of the Whaerenui Hills, is and therefore the hummocking or the undulation that goes along Moonee Road and other parts of the Whaerenui Hills, that escarpment gives opportunity to sort of not disguise, but allow the houses to sit behind that skyline that you view from Speargrass and Mulligans Ridge. And yet I think that gives scant regard to why a lot of people come to Queenstown. If you're going to consider the visitors' appreciation of that greenscape, the people who go to Coronet Peak, the people that come from Wanaka, come over the Crown Terrace, the people who walk in the hills, whether coming back from Skippers or up the Remarkables, the Whaerenui Hills are very evident, and we consider them an outstanding landscape feature. And for them not to be earmarked as such, we don't quite understand whoever, I've just forgotten the girl's name, Reed, was it, who wrote a report about 15 years ago, was it?
Mary.
And that was adopted by Queenstown as the gospel of what are the outstanding landscape features in our basin. Without any opportunity to revisit that with the growth in population as to what else might be included in there. So we see ourselves somewhat unique to other, well, not unique, Slope Hill gets in there, but to other parts of the basin that could be intensified, and don't quite understand why Moonee Road, Whaerenui Hills is deemed to be capable of intensification. The lesser points that I put in my submission, my wife said you won't even consider those, but they are the aesthetic ones, being the night sky and the noise. But they do matter to us when we move to those locations to enjoy without having a house every 6,000 square metres whacked up with screaming kids and nappies everywhere, whatever it is, or to go out at night to be able to look at the night sky without a whole lot of houses lighting up the district. That's why we've deliberately gone there. I don't know how they're going to get on with the infrastructure failings of Kiwi Seton, but we pay the same rates as everyone else in the basin for our rubbish collection, and yet we have to take our rubbish all the way down the end of Moonee Road for a common collection point. And when querying the current contractors, why are we unique and have to do that when we're paying the same rating? They say because the road is a gravel road, just like your traffic consultant. And I said, when's the last time you went up there? It's been sealed for the last 4 years. And he said, it's too narrow for a lorry. And I said, well, there's plenty of horse truck floats go down there and sheep trucks. And he said, but there's no turning bay down the end of Moonee Road for the dump truck to turn around. So these people just haven't even been on site to appreciate what's there, as for the excuses given as to why the rubbish can't be collected from everyone's gate and has to go down to common collection point. But equally, what that serves at with all the tradies flying by, if you don't get your wheelie bin up by 8:30 on Monday morning, by lunchtime it's going to be filled up with either the camper vans going past and throwing their rubbish into it, thinking it's a council provided facility. And so by Monday lunchtime, you've got your bin half full before you've started the next week, basically. But that's just an aside as to where we see the failings of infrastructure living in Moonee Road. I noticed in the report that your consultants for infrastructure and traffic both support retaining the current zone there. And it's really only the landscape consultant sees the potential for Moonee Road to be intensified. Is that correct? Who's going to give an answer on that?
That's correct. They don't raise any particular issues in relation to that.
I think you're answering the opposite question, Mr. Langdon. I think Mr. Hill was saying that they didn't.
My reading of it, yeah. they said that if I was...
They didn't oppose the rural zoning. Sorry, the reduced, the rural zoning.
The lifestyle precinct or the rural zoning?
The rural zoning that the city just requested. Yes.
Yeah, so he is agreeing with me. Is that right, Trevor?
Yeah, I think he is agreeing with you. I think that's right. I think my recollection of the evidence was that they didn't oppose downzoning of any rural properties on the basis that it would put less stress on the infrastructure.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. So that's in a nutshell what I'm talking about is that I see. I see the problem going on in the basin at the moment is, and I don't, you guys are just the messengers. I don't see it as a question of how, it's a question of why. Why are you doing this plan change? And it's because there's this unprecedented demand. The old 7-year property cycle in Queenstown's long gone, we're now on a 15-year burner. And the current incumbents want to cater for that demand by providing a great more supply. And I consider it, especially in the foreign, I see it as desecration of what is a beautiful place with the suggestion that you can intensify with up to 150 houses in there. And it comes back to this, what I call the me generation. 150 years ago, the gold diggers speculated here. Now it's the property speculators that are doing well out of it. And all they're thinking about themselves is themselves and the me generation. And they have scant regard for what they're going to be leaving their future generations. So if you look at what Queenstown attracts people, these sorts of plan changes are only going to change forever the look of the base, and the fabric will change forever. And I wholeheartedly disagree with this plan change on that basis that... the appeal of this place is the breathing space between Arrowtown and Queenstown, and if these things go through, there'll be a continuous ribbon of suburbia going all the way from Arrowtown through to Ladies Mile, Frankton and Queenstown, and it just won't look good. It's a complete and utter balls up by property developers and the council supportive of it. I mean, Paul Keating is quoted 25 years ago here, the Aussie president, saying to the incumbent there, Jim, this is a beautiful place, don't ever let anyone stuff this up. And look what he's doing.
Is that a good time to ask questions?
Yeah, okay. Before I get personal with the current incumbent. Yeah, right.
Do you have any questions?
Thanks, Mr. Hill. You've made the point that there's a lot of emphasis perhaps placed on the tourists' appreciation of the basin. And for you as a resident, do you think that there's some views that are more important than others? You alluded to the fact that there's the view from Coronet, Skippers, and other of the Whare Honoe Hills.
Mm.
As a resident, are there any one of these views that's the standout view of the basin, or are they all just as important as one another?
We ski, we look down from Coronet Peak and it still is a marvel to look out on. But every year we go up there, we see more dots, more sites, more scrapes. We know there's 3,000 platforms already approved here in the basin, and either people can't afford or are just parked on them. That's their lotto ticket. But whether you walk up the shot over, up the arrow, we do a lot of walking. These are the more remote part. We don't obviously walk down the highways. Why would you do that? You'd be faster than the cars. But and so far as any particular landscape standing out above what I referred to, no, I don't really know where that's going, Rachel. I'm sorry. So, yeah.
I think, so as a resident, you enjoy all different parts of the basin, whether it's walking on a trail or skating at Coronet. You enjoy the views from equally, perhaps, not wanting to put words in your mouth, but
except we don't like looking at Lakehays Estate shot over country. Okay. I'm sorry for people who live there.
Perhaps you don't enjoy that blotting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a blot on the landscape, but that's a terrible thing to say to anyone that might live there. But that's just a reflection on what's happened in recent times. Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner
Robinson, Mr. Hale, can you explain with more clarity for me exactly where you live on Mooney Road? You said you're on the south side, but how far down?
We're on the corner, first on the right, 16. It's a 4-acre block there.
In terms of the traffic, you've talked about the width of the road.
Yep.
How wide's the road reserve? Is there space to expand it?
I don't know. There's a bit of gravel each side. It's about 4.647 of what looks to be formed. Is that the right word? Engineering word? And there's just a hot mix down on top of it, 3.7. So I'd suggest that what I read was that there was a supplementary paper prepared for you guys that said it had to be 7 or 7.5 metre wide, so you can have some interesting discussion with the landowners about acquisition, I'd suggest, if that's where it goes.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you. I asked this question of a number of people in this area during the hearings. Community Road seems to be unusual in that it's a hanging valley, a hanging swampland originally, potentially. I was just wondering, with your local knowledge, whether you have a view of where the water drains out of that, in what direction it drains, and where.
On the south side, it goes down into Speargrass. Albeit that the Arrow scheme does have a juncture on Maloney's place, that it can be channeled under the road, down through Woody's place, down into the Millstream aquifer down there, which would be the best water going out of Mill Creek at the moment. Way Millbrook are dusting up that Mill Creek going into Lake Hayes.
And that, I suppose, following on from that, do you think it flows down Speargrass Road towards Lake Hayes or any other direction once that reaches the grass plate?
No, it flows towards the aquifer. Oh, there's a bit of a creek along Speargrass, but it's nowhere near like Mill Stream, toward Lake Hay. So I mean, that's a 100-year floodplain down there on Speargrass. So
was your answer that it flows towards the lake rather than towards the shadow?
Yeah, as I understand it. On the south side of Moody Road, Trevor.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's just the nature of, I mean, as the girl from Auckland said, she got the best view looking out the window of the plane. I mean, if you look down, there's a whole lot of tarns and it's just, there's various layers. The good waters are under about 3 layers of gravel, the good potable water. But you're not allowed to, as a shareholder, Barry, you're not allowed to use Arrow for drinking water because it might be a dead goat up the stream or something like that. So, and you wouldn't know until you got crook. But so water's a real concern. Greater intensification, greater usage will put a hell of a limit on quality as well as quantity. And then everyone wants to go and flush the loo into the paddock, so that's the next big thing too. Unless there's some major spend. I mean, the council had put up an abysmal effort in recent years when this property boom's been going on with lousy development contributions. They could have made a fortune out of it, and they made diddly squat. How are they going to get money out of these roosters that will probably do the snow farmer routine, John Lee? They'll do it better to seek forgiveness than to get permission granted. That's the way it works around here, and it's appalling.
Thank you, that's all.
Is that right?
Thank you, Mr. It's very helpful.
Is So you don't want the lab reports or anything like that? Doesn't matter?
No, I don't really those.
Okay. Thank you for the chance to have a belly up. I hope you guys do see sense as to that arbitrary nature of that line. It's got us and our neighbours very perplexed. It needs to be better communicated. Okay. Thank you. All done?
Yes.
Thanks, Dennis.
Now, the Aircraft Owners Association.
You're running ahead of time today.
We are running ahead of time.
That's good.
You wanted six copies, there, didn't you? Six, right?
Yes.
Thank you. That's dead right.
Yes.
We have met before, sir.
Yes, I think yes. So. It was about 2 years ago.
That's correct. Yes. Yes. Right. Do you want me to read through the notes,
yes,
please? Okay. I've been asked by Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, known as AOPA, to present the following information regarding recent proposed changes to the QLDC proposed district plan regarding the Wocket Basin. I was an original founding member of the association many years ago and served as president in the 1990s. Now, just a little bit of background. You folk have been dealing with Vance Boyd, I think. He had prepared the original submissions, and he's been talking with the planners and dealing with the panel on this matter. So he's currently overseas at the moment, and he's asked me, he briefed me, and I had a little bit of background knowledge of it. So, my name is Robert Jules Tapper. I hold a professional pilot's license, and this November we'll be flying for just over 57 years. I've owned and operated various aircraft, helicopters and gliders for 56 years and have considerable operational experience within the current QLDC area. I first landed at Queenstown Airport 56 years ago when the airfield was just a square grass paddock with several landing vectors. I thus had the benefit of observing aircraft use and aeronautical development of the area over a considerable period of time. With my commercial aviation background in the area and involvement as a senior executive with the Mount Cook Group and Air New Zealand Limited on previous airport planning matters, plus my personal aviation experience, I wish to make the following comments relating to informal aircraft operations in the Wocket Basin. I have hangared various aircraft and a helicopter at three various rural locations within the Wocket Basin since 1974, and in that time I've never had a single complaint regarding aircraft noise or adverse activity. I've always been a strong advocate of the mantra fly neighbourly. Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association thought that our original submissions made regarding the total rural area covered the entire district. We note now that the lifestyle precinct has now become bigger. AOPA members are private aviators. We don't want to annoy people or upset neighbours, but we do want the opportunity to land our aircraft at our homes, etc., or those of our friends, and this should be possible to achieve. Our activity level and noise level is very, very small when compared to the local aviation scene and of short and very intermittent duration. We think there can be an irrational concern given our level of activity. Now, when you look at level of activity, out of interest, I look back through the last 10 years of my operation here in the basin, and I'd never had more than one operation in a day, and I was averaging no more than about 6 to 7 in a month, and now I'm only 2 to 3 a month at most. So private pilots these days on private activity are not flying that often, and generally speaking, you'll find that if they're dropping onto a friend's paddock, to call in, or they're operating, it's for one landing and one takeoff in a day. I'll just make this point. We're not an airport, there's no structure being developed, there's no thought of doing that at all, and we'll come to the number of movements and things in a moment. Right. The nature of the basin zone and precinct means that there's already a good deal of activity, noise from ride-on lawnmowers, tractors, chainsaws, traffic, commercial aircraft, etc. This noise is of considerable duration compared to that of a light aircraft taking off or landing. While no Section 32 report was done, we don't think one sentence in the main report qualifies. We presume that, as stated in the original Section 32 document, QLD accepts the desirability of eliminating unnecessary resource consent hearings for our minor recreational activity. Council has specified a noise limit at the national boundary of the neighbouring properties. We think that it is reasonable and private recreational landing should be allowed subject to it. There are a number of noise experts available who can advise aviators or others on this regard, and I would refer to earlier reports to council supplied by Dr. Charles and Lance Goodman in the old days that showed that in the usually accepted standard of 50 decibels, setbacks of 80 to 100 metres can affect compliance. When Southern Planning Group set 500 metres as a setback, Dr. Charles noted that this rationale has been quite conservative. Now, going back to my original statement, we're not talking about a lot of movements, and I would say, in actual fact, that a conservative number of landings and takeoffs per week or per day with a reasonable setback of 150-odd metres is actually a reasonable solution. QLDC and most other council districts have usually granted resource consents when compliance with noise standards can be shown. So why not apply this, at least for private operations? In the case of Cedar Lodge at Makarora, the consent application was granted when the neighbour was only 70 metres away from the landing site because the standard was still met. Each site will vary depending on terrain, etc., vegetation, etc. One of the things with noise, as you'll be well aware, I'm sure, is that if you have a bund hard structure or trees, the effect of the noise is reduced and diminished quite a lot. Other councils have relied on just the noise standard in their plans. Some, for example, Kakura and Mackenzie, have chosen just to allow private operations, while others allow all types of operations. The Tyree Plain around Mosgiel has a similar density to much of the Wakatipa Basin, and the DCC proposes to control operations by noise only, referring that back to the original submission the association made. Although at this stage we have been denied the opportunity to submit our proposals regarding the basic rural amenity zone due to some ambiguity regarding informal airports not being specifically noted in the public notification to the original Stage 1 submitters, we can't see the rationale for either a 500 metre separation or the need to treat rural amenity and lifestyle precincts separately. From an aviation perspective, the objectives are the same. In other words, they are to provide for our very low level of activity in a way that does not cause annoyance and loss of amenity. We reiterate that compliance with the noise standards should provide this. Private landings have been a part of the Wakatipa Basin scene for a long time. There have been irregular movements over many years at Strains, that's at Lake Hayes, Walkers, just along from them, at Lake Hayes and Monks on McDonnell Road. Activity at these sites has now ceased, mainly because houses are starting to intrude on, and in the case of Walkers, I abandoned that site when I heard they were going to have the retirement village there, and I thought I'd only have to do a couple of takeoffs over the top of some of the oldies there and there'd be all sorts of legal stuff. So I voluntarily left that area. It didn't have to be legislated. I think most people would realise that. There is now only commercial helicopter activity at Stonacket Point Lodge. For several years from a private heliport northwest of Arthur's Point up the shot over canyon, a private strip for top dressing at Greenslade. That's as you go to Coronet Peak, you go along the road a little bit further, it's at the base of the hill below Coronet Peak, and that's been there for many, many years. But that's only used for top dressing these days. The private activity airstrip at Macaulay's, which is along just back a little bit on the other side of the road from Mulwark, and the private helicopter landing zone at the Fairfax property off Mulligan's Road, and the Bunn family airstrip at Morven Ferry Road, from where top dressing and minimal private use activity has been undertaken for over 45 years. If a 500 metre setback is retained and informal airports remain a discretionary activity in the precinct, there'll be little opportunity for new informal airports. What has happened is that over the last 10 years or so, housing has been approved on an incremental basis, and now it is planned that we should require resource consent to provide for the reverse sensitivity that has developed as a result. This is unfair and unnecessary. I would reiterate that if it's not written in there, but thinking about looking through Craig's report, the Section 42 report he wrote, I think 99% of people would be more than happy if you had a 150-metre setback and one maximum one landing and takeoff a day. That would satisfy. And the thing is, it would certainly be well within the noise standards that other areas are using. Craig mentions in his report that in actual fact this would be hard to monitor, but if somebody did more than one landing and takeoff, neighbours would certainly be on the ball with that one, and it wouldn't be difficult for the council to monitor. Conversely, for the council and panels to go through for a few people who might wish to operate an aircraft within the precinct on an irregular basis, like I'm suggesting, to have to go through the whole resource consent process would seem to be a pretty restrictive imposition on their operation, because it's minor effect. You take a chainsaw running, I had some guy chopping wood for 6 hours last Sunday, adjoining my place at Lake Hayes, and I would say the noise decibels would be around 80, somewhere around about that level. Considerable irritation, and that's as of right they can do it. So those are my comments. Welcome to answer questions.
Mr. Tapper, from the impression I have reading your evidence and hearing you speak to it, is that you're talking about small fixed-wing aircraft.
Correct.
Is there a distinction to be drawn between those, the one-engine Cessna,
yes,
and the choppers?
Yes, well, that brings up a point. It's interesting. Aircraft, if you look at the Civil Aviation Act, that doesn't matter what they are. It's anything that's deriving this lift. It can be a paraglider. It's considered to be an aircraft, for example. But the thing is, I know what you're saying, that a helicopter would possibly be considered to be a noisy, especially if it was a turbine helicopter, would possibly be considered to be a little different. We, in our language, though, if we talk about our aircraft, and that's what we're talking about in this precinct, we believe there are very, very few opportunities within the precinct that even with a 150-metre setback, there would be the opportunity to put on an airstrip. There may be for helicopters, but I would have to say that the people who were interested in the original plan, if they haven't already submitted to it relative to helicopters, well, then they'll have to abide by the plan as it becomes operative. For those who are still within the basin but not in the precinct, we've got existing use rights, and as I say, I'm not trying to protect my own position. I'm at the end of my career now, but the airstrip where I operate from is well out of the way from houses, and it's been in operation for nearly 50 years. So anybody who built in that area, in fact, the farmland that people who built on used to belong to the owner of the airstrip originally. So it's been sold off in blocks over the years.
And the other thing I want to get clear on is that you've talked about for the history of informal airports in the basin.
Yes.
How many informal airstrips are currently active?
There's only those ones I've mentioned, and that's including the heliport. There's been a quiet reduction. You see, the Strange strip's got where I originally had the strip at the Strange. That was the original drop dressing strip that was here from 1952. And basically, when Jim Bolt did the subdivision there and put the road across my airstrip, that was the end of that one. And then I moved over to the Walkers, and after Bill died, unfortunately, also when I heard the plans for the retirement village, I voluntarily left that area. Even though I probably I've been there long enough probably to get an as of right thing until the land was redesignated, which it probably will be. See, it was a rural zone when I first went there. Now, the other, I don't know if you've got a wee map in front of you, but as I mentioned, you've only got that one at the base of Crinet Peak in terms of an airstrip. you've got the one just up from the other side of the road from Millbrook, and you've got the Bun Strip, end of story, that's the whole basin. And they are actually all not in the, none of them are in the precinct, they're in the rural amenity zone. But you can imagine if you were somebody who's come to the district and you've got a light aircraft and you could do a setback of 150 metres and you would not do more than landing, one landing and take off. I can't see the harm in it. You know, I've always, whenever I've been landing anywhere, and I think most good pilots do it, they go and approach the neighbours. Like when I went to Walkers, I went and saw all the neighbours, including the old vet clinic, and talked to them and said what I was thinking of doing. And I said, I won't be doing more than one landing and takeoff a day. There'll be no circuits, no training. When you won't even hear me come in properly. You might hear me on takeoff. And that was the thing. I used to try and do all my approaches over Lake Hayes and just land straight in, and that was it. And on takeoff, it was take off and get out of it. And I think this is the story. Most people now are very cognizant of noise. And I haven't heard, for example, the chap Monk, who used to be on McDonnell Road, that's now being covered by the new village that's going in there too. So the big thing is he had to go somewhere, and of course he's gone to his partner's property, and she was a bun, so that's where he operates from. But he might do one or two landings and takeoffs in the week. But that's an existing use right that he's got. It's Mr. Bun, his father, had aircraft for many years now. I don't think it's going to be a burgeoning activity. And I do feel personally that I feel sympathy for people who feel it could get out of hand. And if anybody was going to do more than, say, two landings and takeoffs in a day, I think it should be. And my personal view is I think it should be a discretionary thing. But for a single landing and a single takeoff, and even if in a week you even said no more than one a day and maybe no less than five in any calendar week, but then that brings in, when did the week start, finish, and monitoring it. I can see council's, the planner's point of view when he says that this actually could be hard to monitor. I'm saying, well, why not just make it no more than one landing and take off in a day, 150 metres setback. I don't think you're going to be overwhelmed with people, because I don't think there'll be many places, especially within the precinct, where you're going to get your clearance. Because if you think about it, imagine an airstrip. At any point on that airstrip, you've got to be 150 metres clear of a house. I think that'll be pretty hard to achieve. There may be a few places, but for one landing and takeoff, I can't see a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Pepper.
Thank you.
Just if you could clarify for me, please, how many members are there in your association?
About 900.
900.
Yes. There's about 700 aircraft. It's the largest organisation in the world. A lot of people don't realise AOPA International is a huge organisation. It's got more aircraft and people in it than in the airline industry.
And how many in the district?
Here?
Yes.
I think when you say in the whole district, that's the QLDC district, I'd imagine somewhere around about 100. Originally, there were 28 of us started the group back in the early 60s, and they were mainly farmers, and we used to go out and visit their place, and it was a sort of a sociable sort of a thing. But now, it's throughout New Zealand, and it's been a very powerful lobby group in terms of government legislation and new legislation and ideas and medical requirements and things like that. And it follows a lot of the internationally established protocols. So it's quite a big effort. They had the international conference here last year. No, it was earlier this year, sorry. They had 1,588 delegates from overseas.
Thank you.
Just in terms of that, of the roughly 100 members in the district,
yes.
How many are fixed wing owners and how many are helicopter owners do you know?
It was young Andrew Fairfax that you've met, I think, haven't you? He's at Mallet. I thought you knew him personally. I think he had applications in to council. I thought he might have heard them. There's myself, in terms of operations in the basin, myself and Andrew. And I think that's it.
What?
That are helicopter. I'm helicopter and fixed wing. He's helicopter and fixed wing too. There's only two of us at the moment. But in terms of fixed wing, I'm trying to think. In terms of private operations of exterior strips, maybe three. I'm not too sure about the ownership of one aircraft.
So say the base of Ridley.
Yeah, no, and I'm thinking about I'm thinking more about the fact that in the future you might get another five or six people over the next 10 years that might wish to operate within the basin. We've been discouraged by the local airport to have general aviation activities from that airport, both two ways, both in terms of being put down way down the priority order, and the second thing, it's the most expensive airport to land light aircraft out in New Zealand. So there's a huge financial disincentive. Training has gone from here, the Aero Club's gone. So when we talk about private aviation off the airport, there is virtually none. There are one or two airplanes still, they hang themselves there. Well, not so much hang, they're picketed down at the airport, but they fly from that, they fly away from there, and they may come back. But there's no activity at the airport, nobody does circuits there, it's too expensive. Like for a six-place Cessna, it's about $45 a landing.
Thank you. What's the rough length of these farm strips?
The average farm strip for the average guy would be about 450-500 metres. Yeah. Some are smaller because some of these new ultra-light machines, they're quite light and they've got, you know, about 100 horsepower, so their power-to-weight ratio is pretty good. And some guys might get down about 300-350 metres in length.
And just one other interest in your view. We've heard from, I can't recall exactly who it was, I think QSE were possibly, that the GA and small aircraft make up about 5% of the air noise bucket, if you like, for the Queenstown noise boundaries.
But that would include the general aviation activity going to Milford.
Yes.
Private aviation wouldn't even register on the scale.
It was
quite interesting. Just before I came in, I got to give you an idea of the number of landings and takeoffs. I just did a quick copy of my flight manual, and the thing was, you know, one and two. God, I had it nice and handy a few minutes ago. It's only one or two movements in a month. In the last year, and I believe it's quite interesting when you see the civil aviation stats. In actual fact, you see that the actual number of landings and takeoffs, and also hours flown by general aviation, private general aviation, has done a huge drop. There are two reasons for that. One is cost, and the second thing, well, it's the running cost, and also the capital cost of replacement gear. Yeah,
I understand that, So just in light of that, so that we understand that these small aircraft are a very small part of the noise bucket, if you like. But we're also told by QAC that they make up a vast majority of the complaints received.
No, they don't. No. You've got to differentiate. No, that's not correct. And I dispute that. No. I know what you're saying. General aviation noise is an irritant. But it's mainly coming, 99% of that is coming from the commercial operations. It's also the way that airways are streaming them going out. Now, in the morning, generally, if there's no wind, they take off towards Cromwell and they turn left, and the procedure is that they're supposed to go to the east of the Shotover River. Now, the Crail Rise people got really cheesed off when a lot of guys were cutting the corner as they went towards the Skipper's Saddle. Now, I, on behalf of a group of concerned residents, I got buttonholed by a very all right guy, so it's got nothing to do with me. But anyway, I'll take up the case. And I went to the Milford Users Group and I said, listen, you're starting to piss people off. You must conform with that, otherwise you're going to get people complaining to airways and there'll be prosecutions and that. And that's where the major irritant has been, is on that vector. Coming back from Milford, where most of the traffic is coming from, they now schedule them to go up to the water peak side of the thing to keep them well clear of the takeoff and overshoot area on the main runway for heavy aircraft. They must not be above 2,000 feet going across the lake. They come across to about where the road goes up to the ski field at the Remarkables, and then they cut left and they come down on the downwind side, slightly clear of the built-up areas, and then come around and land. They either go straight in and land on the grass vector, or if they had to come around and land on the main runway. And they're purposely taking them away from the people. So the main irritant is undoubtedly that area after takeoff, especially when they've got a lot of power on and they're climbing, and they've cut the corner instead of going right down to the bridge and staying east of the Shotover River. So I think that problem, it's been brought up at an operator level. And we as private operators, working on a very itinerant basis, don't want to be tarred with the same brush as some of those guys that might be querying the pitch.
Thank you, I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tepper.
Thank you. Good, thank you. Can't find that copy, but oh, there must have been somewhere else. I might just sit down and listen to what Craig has to say. Is it straight after being as the
yes.
Council? Thank you.
Back to you in about 3 minutes with
that.
I can tell you about the, because I looked and there is none on the appeal version.
Meanwhile, I'll